long hard days. They don't say God's changed my ways, changed my ways, those evil. So I set out across that way, strike them down to make them pay, change their ways, their evil ways. But I can't.
Welcome back. Top of the third hour of today's Road Warrior Radio broadcast. This Monday, October 21st, 2019. And again, just sort of exploring some of the talking points surrounding this somewhat mysterious and enigmatic yet in vogue term, democratic socialism. Why is it so difficult to define? Why is it defined so differently by so many? And what makes it so attractive? I think we'll explore this further throughout this week, but it's curious to me, for anyone who studies and understands and appreciates history, that the Fabian Society, according to the Wikipedia entry for the Fabian Society, is a British socialist organization whose purpose is to advance the principles of democratic socialism via gradualist and reformist efforts in democracies, rather than by revolutionary overthrow. And so you start to investigate the Fabian Society, founded January 4, 1884, in London as an offshoot of a society founded a year earlier called the Fellowship of the New Life, which is another interesting study. But the Fabian Society was named at the suggestion of Frank Podmore in honor of the Roman general Quintus Fabius Maximus Verrucus, who sought gradual victory against the superior Carthaginian army under the renowned general Hannibal through persistence, harassment, and wearing the enemy down by attrition rather than pitched climactic battles. And so that's what we're engaged in America today, is a war of attrition. And people don't understand concepts like learned helplessness, and how when you seek contradictory efforts and stories put before you in the media, it just kind of makes you want to give up. That's exactly. Adam Curtis made a brilliant documentary titled Century of the Self. It is a four-part series published back in 2002, BBC series. The first part was titled Happiness Machines, which was based largely on Sigmund Freud's nephew, Edward Bernays, and his efforts in fusing Bernays' work and the concept of the will to pleasure to Madison Avenue marketing. In other words, before the turn of the 20th century, marketing, so-called, dealt with the facts. Here is a, you know, here is a widget, and this is what it does. Here are the facts of the widget. Along came Edward Bernays, and he fused together Uncle Sigmund Freud's concept of the will to pleasure and these tapping into these latent desires that we all supposedly have, and fusing that to marketing. And then you get the, again, that transition from the concept of a want becoming a need. And, you know, we all hear kids say that around Christmas time in America. I need it. No, you have been convinced to believe that a want rises to the level of a need. And as I've explained recently, the concept of the will to power is actually, we're transitioning from the society of will to pleasure to will to power. And that's where you can see all of this viciousness rising to the top. And again, books like Kevin Dutton's The Wisdom of Psychopaths, I think is sort of emblematic of what I'm talking about. The Wisdom of Psychopaths, what saints, spies, and serial killers can teach us about success. Can you imagine a book of that title being published 50 years ago and embraced by mainstream America? It's available on Amazon. Amazon won't sell you certain things, but you can learn about the wisdom of psychopaths and what serial killers can teach us about success. That was published in 2012, and I believe there's been a corresponding rise of literature that I've talked about in the past. You know, sociopaths and psychopaths, are they really such bad people? And you know what, maybe they're good at corporate leadership, and in fact now they're considered corporate darlings because they're unhindered by conscience and, you know, emotional dilemmas and things of that nature, which I find disturbing and unsettling. But again, like I said at the outset of today's broadcast, people don't understand that underlying all of this is just trying to create a society that moves along dialectical lines instead of being rooted and grounded in didactic logic and reasoning and truth. Right thinking, in other words, you know, to be a society that says it's wrong to, you know, murder is wrong. It's wrong to kill. Versus the trolley car dilemma that college students learn about now. Should I kill one really important person or 10 not so important people? These are dilemmas that don't occur in real life, but that are used to bend people's minds around perverted concepts. And so as I pointed out earlier, you look at you know, I was reading from the Wikipedia entry for narcissistic personality disorder. You look at these cluster B personality disorders and the Wikipedia entry for narcissistic personality disorder under the section signs and symptoms. It reads, the DSM-5 indicates that in order to qualify as symptoms of NPD, narcissistic personality disorder, the person's manifested personality traits must substantially differ from the cultural norms of society. So, if we have all suddenly become malignant narcissists, sociopaths, or psychopaths, and we've learned, as Kevin Dutton puts it, the wisdom of psychopaths, then I guess it's not substantially different from cultural norms of society. So are we all going to become cannibals in America now because it's normal? That's just the cultural norm. And that sounds harsh to some folks. But when you look at books like The Wisdom of Psychopaths, What Serial Killers Can Teach Us About Success, just think about the title. This is where we are in America today. I would submit this is markedly different from where we were 40, 50, 60 years ago, which again reminds me of Aldous Huxley's words. The charm of history and its enigmatic lesson consist in the fact that from age to age, nothing changes, and yet everything is completely different. It's that Fabian battle that occurs at glacial speed, so no one notices it. Gradual victory through persistence, harassment, and wearing the enemy down by attrition rather than pitched climactic battles. So I submit the term democratic socialism corresponds to these efforts. So you have the words of Frederick Taylor Gates as an illustration of what I usually refer to as old school bad guys envisioned for America, the country school of tomorrow. And the way that Gates put it in the country school of tomorrow from the publications of the General Education Board. How many people know that so many of these boards and agencies, you know, the National Institutes of Health was begun by the Rockefellers as a eugenics operation? For those who don't know what eugenics is and the perils of it, read Edwin Black's War Against the Weak, Eugenics and America's Campaign to Create a Master Race. That's a shocking title. Yeah, well, it's kind of a shocking subject. So the General Education Board, Occasional Papers number 1, The Country School of Tomorrow by Frederick Gates, published in 1913. Gates wrote, "In our dream, we have limitless resources and the people yield themselves with perfect docility to our molding hand. Present educational conventions fade from our minds, and unhampered by tradition, we work our own goodwill upon a grateful and responsive folk. We shall not try to make these people or any of their children into philosophers or men of learning or science. We are not to raise up from among them authors, orators, poets, or men of letters. We shall not search for embryo great artists, painters, musicians, nor will we cherish even the humbler ambition to raise up from among them lawyers, doctors, preachers, politicians, statesmen, of whom we now have ample supply." I thought we were taught that you could become anything you want in America. And if this is the case, if this is what certain people envisioned over 100 years ago, then what of the Abraham Lincolns of America, for example? And when you take the Fabian socialist mindset a step further, again, I'm considering the term democratic socialism and the Fabian Society being a British socialist organization whose purpose is to advance the principles of democratic socialism via gradualist and reformist efforts in democracies rather than by revolutionary overthrow. You start to listen to these terms, this language, and examine the landscape of America and reflect over the last several decades. And I think it's the inescapable conclusion is this is what's been happening in America, what these people have been advocating. When someone like Peter Thiel says to Tyler Cohen in 2015 in his conversation with Tyler at George Mason University's Mercatus Center that America is dominated by these very unelected technocratic agencies, you know, that should say something to people. The Truth Seeker of the Far North on this network, Ralph Winterode, has done a magnificent job, I would say, of covering the Federal Register, for example. Most people have never heard of the Federal Register, and yet that's where the bulk of what is considered law is, that's where it's promulgated. The agencies promulgate substantive rules of conduct presumed to have the force and effect of law. What does that even mean? Who's heard of the Federal Register? Who's watching the hundreds of pages published a day? Who understands that the comment period of however many days, 30, 60, 90 days, if there is nothing, if there is no comment, then this is presumed, whatever's published essentially is presumed to have the force and effect of law. Which gets back to the concept of socialism, the fact that, as Hayek pointed out, it's always been frankly authoritarian. You have planners, the concept of benefiting from the planning because you're steering it through organizations like ALEC, the American Legislative Exchange Council. Writing legislation is not a new concept. For more on that, go to alecexposed.org. But as I've mentioned many times, guys like James Madison warned us about the sagacious and moneyed few who are able to harvest the benefits of government regulations. From Federalist number 62, he told us, "The unreasonable advantage it gives to the sagacious, the enterprising, and the moneyed few, a mutable government, that is." Like when you're publishing stuff every day in the Federal Register, it's a mutable government. It gives the sagacious, the enterprising, and the moneyed few the advantage it gives them over the industrious and uninformed mass of the people. He said, "Every new regulation concerning commerce or revenue or in any manner affecting the value of the different species of property presents a new harvest to those who watch the change and can trace its consequences, a harvest reared not by themselves, but by the toils and cares of the great body of their fellow citizens." This is a state of things, Madison wrote, in which it may be said with some truth that the laws are made for the few and not the many. And I think it's a short trip from there to Gary Allen's Rockefeller file, published back in 1974, no, 76, excuse me. And chapter 4 specifically, which I always think of, profit times philanthropy equals power. In Gary Allen's Rockefeller file, he mentioned that he wrote in the opening chapter, the multi-billion dollar myth, Rockefellers invented a scheme used by the super rich today whereby the more money you appear to give away, the richer and more powerful you become. George Soros just gave away $18 billion recently. So supposedly, is he living in a squalor now, in a hovel? Bill Gates keeps giving away billions of dollars to charity. But are they becoming less wealthy? Or is this a way to shift resources to do exactly what Gary Allen wrote about in one of Aaron and Melissa Dyke's recent videos over at True Stream Media? Melissa Dyke's talked about the worship of Bill Gates and these folks. You start to understand the correlation between this concept, Gary Allen's Rockefeller File, Chapter 4, Profit Times Philanthropy Equals Power, where he explains how he quotes Meyer Coutts from Rockefeller Power. Meyer Coutts is Rockefeller Power. "Philanthropy is the essential element in the making of Rockefeller Power. It gives the Rockefellers a priceless reputation as public benefactors, which the public values so highly that power over public affairs is placed in the Rockefellers' hands. Philanthropy generates more power than wealth alone can provide." This is why everybody's always giving away billions of dollars. Because philanthropy generates more power than wealth alone can provide. Or as Gary Allen titled the chapter, "Profit times philanthropy equals power." You notice the more they give away, it seems the wealthier and more powerful they become. And so you can see this concept fused together with the technocrats' mindset of wanting to socially engineer society. They become these concepts are useful handmaidens. Profit times philanthropy equals power, and technocracy, specifically in this case. And of course, education has to be prepared in advance to endorse all of this, which was precisely what Thomas McNeice wrote in his report to the Rees Committee. He called what happened in America in the early 20th century a revolution. And he was not being hyperbolic. Stick around. Be right back.
Corporate media dominates the American opinion. Finding independent voices that counter this avalanche is becoming increasingly difficult. With the endless corruption running rampant throughout our government, independent voices are needed more than ever to battle the offensive against our freedoms and liberties. As a listener of RBN, no one understands this concept better than you. Now it's up to you to do your part. The time has come for you to take action and begin broadcasting the truth to hundreds or thousands of people every month. Sound impossible? Quite the contrary. With pointed slogans from LibertyStickers.com, you can reach countless sleeping Americans unaware that they live in a real-life wonderland. LibertyStickers.com has a huge inventory of political bumper stickers and messages that reflect the truth about our government, our politicians, and the future of America. With so many in stock, there's one perfect for you. Visit us today at LibertyStickers.com. Again, that's LibertyStickers.com. Do your part. Your voice is important. Let it be heard.
Many people write us about their experience with Extendivite. Allow me to read you some from Amazon.com. This product is superb. I have been taking it for about a year now, and I can feel my cardiovascular system run like a Swiss watch. I definitely recommend this product for anyone that has high cholesterol, high blood pressure, and heart palpitations, A+. It's potent, but it works. I have been waking up for the past 3 years with numb hands, and a week into using Extendivite, my numb hands seem to have cleared up. My circulation was off, and now it's back on track. So I'm happy. I feel so energized, and I have my husband on it now. My mother-in-law has cholesterol problems, so I bought her a bottle as well. Thank you so much. Love the product. Tell us your story. Get Extendivite today. Call 1-877-928-8822 or visit heartdrop.com.
Extend your life with Extendivite.
Tired of being lied to by mass media? It's growing more and more apparent today that news is received less and less through standard media outlets. Even with a growing audience every day, RBN is beginning to direct more efforts into social media. Social media and the use of the internet is fast becoming the primary source of people for news, regardless of demographic. RBN has set out to provide some of the best news on the internet through republicbroadcasting.org and also has begun to use the tools to our advantage by way of social media. Republic Broadcasting is now operating a Facebook page to function as yet another avenue to have our collective voice reach new audiences across not only America, but across the globe as well. The Facebook page features not only news, but also an RBN player to listen to our broadcast. Get involved by visiting facebook.com/republicbroadcasting and liking our page and share it with your friends and family, because you can handle the truth.
Reluctantly crouched at the starting line, engines pumping and thumping in time. The green light flashes, the flags go up. Churning and burning, they yearn for the cup. They deftly maneuver and muscle for rank. Fuel burning fast on an empty tank. Reckless and wild, they pour through the turns. Their prowess is potent and secretly stern. As they speed through the finish, the flags go down. The fans get up and they get out of town. The arena is empty, except for one man still driving and striving as fast as he can. The sun has gone down and the moon has come up. And long ago somebody left with the cup. But he's driving and striving and hugging the turns and thinking of someone for whom he still burns. He's going the distance. He's going for speed. She's all alone. All alone in a time of need. Because he's racing and pacing and plotting the course. He's fighting and fighting and riding on his horse. He's going the distance.
No trophy, no flowers. Welcome back. How many people know that there was a revolution in America? Well, I mean, it depends on who you listen to, but there was more than one. I mentioned Gary Lawson's Rise and Rise of the Administrative State earlier. And speaking of technocracy and rising, that's the title of Parag Khanna's book. People that don't understand that technocracy went into hiding and obscurity back in the late 30s, but then was revived by Zbigniew Brzezinski in the 70s at Columbia University. And of course, Patrick Wood brought that to most people's attention. Patrick Wood, the co-author of Trilaterals Over Washington with the late, great Anthony Sutton, published back in Volume 1, 79, Volume 2, 1980. But this concept of, and who's ever heard of the Trilateral Commission for that matter? But those who don't know that technocracy got a reboot in the 70s, compliments of Zbigniew Brzezinski at Columbia University, should perhaps check out Parag Khanna's Technocracy in America, Rise of the Info State. And again, whenever I think of technocrats and a data-driven society, I think of that phrase that Mark Twain attributed to Benjamin Disraeli. There are three kinds of lies: lies, damn lies, and statistics. And you can torture the data. If you torture it enough, you can get it to sing any tune you want. That's, to me, what technocracy represents. It's the socialists' tool. You know, it's the religion of scientism and querying the data. We have the soothsayers of data that can query the data and tell us what we should do. Well, it's funny that the studies I've mentioned, for example, recently, University of Washington scientist Henry Lai, who had his study where his work was coming under scrutiny from the telecom industry, and he actually started investigating the study data and found that the industry funded studies were overwhelmingly in support of whatever the industry was advancing, whereas the independent studies were overwhelmingly against what the industry was pushing. Imagine that. Industry funded studies were supporting what industry wanted. Imagine that. Which, speaking of Mark Twain and lies, damn lies, and statistics, Mark Twain's corn pone opinions. You know, show me where a man gets his corn pone and I'll tell you what his opinions is. It's kind of interesting. Little fun facts. Anyway, Mark Twain, the wisdom of Mark Twain. So, the danger of the technocrat, you know, you have the admission of Frederick Taylor Gates, we're not going to look for statesmen or philosophers, men of learning or science. We're not concerned with that. We already have enough of those guys. The danger of the technocratic mindset and the planner who wants to plan everyone's life. And that reminds me of Reagan. Maybe we'll play that clip in the next segment. What Ronald Reagan said. This is the issue. Remember 1964 Goldwater campaign trail? This is the issue of this election. Whether we believe in our capacity for self-government, or whether we confess that a little intellectual elite in a far distant capital can plan our lives for us better than we can plan them ourselves. That's still the issue today. Anyway, on that note, go to a break, stick around, be right back after this short break.
You are tuned in to the Republic Broadcasting Network. Visit our website by going to republicbroadcasting.org.
Without the right accessories, any guy can be off the mark. Whether you've invested thousands in your arsenal or you own a single trusted firearm, a visit to AROutfitting.com is in order. It's one of the finest online selections of tactical optics and AR parts and add-ons. like EOTech, quick target acquisition with no peripheral loss. Browse the full range of Nikon scopes and binoculars. AirOutfitting.com can illuminate your world with Streamlight gun-mounted lights from keychain to large handhelds up to 1,100 lumens. Find some stability with Battenfield tactical bipods. AirOutfitting.com has CMMG gun parts, barrels, assemblies, handguards, part kits, and more. Plus Magpul clips and magazines. I know I've got you excited, so take a breath. Head to AirOutfitting.com. The site's super easy to navigate and features a ton of technical info, including links to manuals. We also welcome vendor and manufacturer inquiries. Remember, if you don't see it, we can get it at AirOutfitting.com.
Talk Right, the conservative app offered by TalkStream Live that caters exclusively to the conservative talk radio community. Here you'll see only talk shows and podcasts from the conservative right, all the big broadcast names and online digital shows in one place. Talk Right makes it easy to find all your favorite conservative talkers with all the upscale features you come to expect from TalkStream Live. Keep up with the fast-paced political world. Download Talk Right today from Google Play or the App Store.
Hey, is that a new music app?
Yeah, check it out, Surfer Music Discovery. It links to thousands of online stations, but the twist is you see the song names and artists that are now playing live.
That's different. No guessing. Looks like a waterfall of music.
So many formats. Rock, oldies, country, R&B, jazz, and a whole lot more.
How's that spelled?
Surfer. S-U-R-F-R.
Is it expensive?
It's free. No need to sign up or sign in.
Get the Surfer Music app free from Google Play or the App Store.
Homeowners, are you in foreclosure, expecting to be served with a foreclosure lawsuit, or suspect your lender has coerced you into an illegal mortgage transaction? A huge number of mortgages made in the last 10 years have legal issues and are possibly defective. State laws and the U.S. Supreme Court have upheld that defective mortgage documents are grounds for foreclosure defense and for counterclaims in favor of the homeowner. If your mortgage has been sold or assigned since closing the loan, it may be defective and you may be paying the wrong party, and the lender may not have standing or the right to foreclose or collect payments under the law. If you would like to know if your mortgage is legal or not, or know if you are paying the right party, we can help. Our initial consultations are free of charge. We are not attorneys. We are legal researchers and work closely with experienced lawyers who know how to help you find the evidence to help you keep your home. Call toll-free 1-855-2-KEEP-IT. That's 1-855-2-KEEP-IT today.
Birds flying high, you know how I feel. Sun in the sky, you know how I feel. Breeze drifting on by, you know how I feel. It's a new dawn, it's a new day, it's a new life for me. And I'm feeling good. I'm feeling good. Fish in the sea, you know how I feel. River running free, you know how I feel. Blossom on a tree, you know how I feel. It's a new dawn, it's a new day, it's a new life for me. And I'm feeling good. Dragonfly out in the sun, you know what I mean, don't you know? Butterflies all having fun, you know what I mean.
We're at war with the most dangerous enemy that has ever faced mankind in his long climb from the swamp to the stars. And it's been said if we lose that war, and in so doing lose this way of freedom of ours, history will record with the greatest astonishment that those who had the most to lose did the least to prevent its happening. Well, I think it's time we ask ourselves if we still know the freedoms that were intended for us by the Founding Fathers. Not too long ago, two friends of mine were talking to a Cuban refugee, a businessman who had escaped from Castro. And in the midst of his story, one of my friends turned to the other and said, "We don't know how lucky we are." And the Cuban stopped and said, "How lucky you are. I had some place to escape to." And in that sentence, he told us the entire story. If we lose freedom here, there's no place to escape to. This is the last stand on earth. And this idea that government is beholden to the people, that it has no other source of power except the sovereign people, is still the newest and the most unique idea in all the long history of man's relation to man.
There you go. Ronald Reagan, 1964, A Time for Choosing. And around this time of year, incidentally, this to me sort of embodies the struggle into which we've been plunged. That's a whole separate issue. Maybe we'll get into that this week. The idea that, again, speaking of cluster B personality disorders, which I would argue are being engineered in American society at large through mechanisms like entertainment, obviously, movies, music, television, and those things, but social media as well, it breeds a sense of entitlement that lends itself to social conflict. And especially with things like borderline personality disorder, a reductive sort of logic process, an oversimplification of things, a lack of nuance, seems to lend itself to conflict. And then, of course, you have related, antisocial personality disorder and histrionic personality disorder, which is the DSM-5 equivalent of what Alan Watt refers to as the hysterical attention-seeking psychopath, a pervasive attention-seeking behavior, including inappropriately seductive behavior and shallow or exaggerated emotions. It's interesting to me that suddenly Sean Spicer is a name that folks know because he's on Dancing with the Stars. I find that fascinatingly ironic. And there's a reason why they call Washington, D.C. Hollywood for ugly people. Anyway, let's go to the phones real quick and grab William in Montana. William, thanks for calling. Welcome.
Good morning, Chris.
Morning, William.
Yeah, it's very interesting that, we know the importance of history. We have to go back and look at these things and try to analyze them. But one of the problems of the type of history that we have now, and we've had, all the way back to looking backwards, to Bellamy's era, is that often the major events that are being analyzed or pointed out or explained are kind of window dressings. There's a lot that supported, before Bellamy came out with his book, there was a lot of effort, by a lot of important people, many of which the names are very difficult to locate. When you start talking about John Dewey and Charles Beard, the historian, and the editor of the Atlantic Monthly, Edward Weeks. If you trace their lineages, you'll find that even, Edward Bellamy's Looking Backwards and the work, done by his Francis Bellamy, these were kind of literary window dressings. They were the things that were presented. There were forces behind them that were really, working a lot of different angles. And so then you have, Bellamy is sort of like a literary window dressing where people can point to. It was very popular because a lot of people were asking a lot of questions because, you know, everybody talks about the Depression, the one that began in, what is it, October, you know, 1929. But there were many other, there were many other depressions that happened in the United States. And if you go to those areas and you look at some of these more important depressions that happened, there was always a flare-up of what someone might call this socialist thinking, because many people were damaged, you know, severely in these depressions. And so they were, you know, and so in order to keep people from getting out of control, you know, keep people from saying, hey, I just lost everything, what do I have to lose? A lot of these rethinking of different ways that we can solve this problem, and let's not get mad, you know, and let's not go headhunting. We know that a few made out like bandits in all these depressions. There were massive transfer of wealth. And we know that the few, and it's amazing if, again, if you look at the lineage of these few that made out like bandits, it's amazing how often it runs in the same families, you know. And so it's interesting. I mean, there was a major panic in 1893, and it was supposedly, you know, some of the historians say, well, it always started by an event, and the one in 1893 was started by a bankruptcy of the, Philadelphia and Reading Railroad, because they had basically, you know, just went out of their way to expand, and eventually they were overexpanded. And when that depression hit and the bank runs happened, there was like, you know, 500 banks that closed, 16,000 businesses that failed, and unemployment remained very high for 5 years. And in some ways, it was the worst depression up until, you know, the Great Depression in 29. And so what happened was that Bellamy gained new life, you know, in the 30s, in 1935. They said, we got to study this. And so Columbia University, put forth this big study, to try to find out what happened. You know, don't you all start thinking, as you people that lost everything, this was just like, some great comptroller in the sky, you know, was managing this. There was no collusion, there was no conspiracy, and there's no one to get angry at. We all have to pull together and rethink this. And it's amazing how often, like, you know, back in the 1893, how Bellamy sort of appeared on the scene, and that's why, you know, all these organizations, all these clubs, you know, appeared, because a lot of people saw the hurt around them, and they needed to have some answers. But it's interesting that if you also go behind, you know, who published his stuff. I mean, Bellamy's stuff, you know, was published in the Ladies' Home Journal. You know, he had articles featured right on the front page of, you know, looking backwards. You know, what Christmas in 2000 is going to look like, and this was like in 1899 or something like that, and he even talked about the, you know, how he wrote this. And it was featured in Ladies' Home Journal. I mean, this along with, you know, new quilt designs and how to make the best jams. That just didn't appear. If you actually look how he got in that magazine and why he was featured on the front pages, you will find some more of these familiar names. And if you trace their lineages, it's amazing how few, you know, families were, you know, doing this. So again, it's like, hey, folks, yeah, I know you all took it in the ear, but here's something that would really perk your interest. And it was a type of antidote. It was a type of diversion. It was a type of window dressing. And, you know, that's why when you really get into the history of this, you have to dig deeper and say, who were behind? Who were pulling the strings? Who facilitated this? Who financed this? And if you, it's amazing how Bellamy had New Life kept coming back about three or four times, and it was always during one of these periods of a depression, you know, because there's been, it's very interesting to go and see all of the depressions that has actually happened in this country. You know, mm-hmm. there was also the panic of 1907, the panic of 1893. And if you look at these things, it was always a result of unchecked speculation by the few, and then the bubble breaks. Mm-hmm. And it usually was, the historians will say, well, it was always precipitated. The real reason was that railroad went bankrupt, or there was the fire, the Chicago fire, or there was whatever they used. It was actually a very concerted effort by bankers to create debt over and over again. Mm-hmm. And this debt slavery, had to be covered because, people, there were a few of them made out like bandits, a lot that got completely destroyed, and that's a dangerous situation. If you don't come rushing to the fore with something to take their attention away, or some war, you might end up, people might start coming, with pitchforks and torches and stuff like that. So it's very interesting when you read the history on this whole stuff, that you understand that there are events, there's managed events, there are events that are declared the key, and then there's the window dressings that come to the fore to say, this was not planned, this is not a conspiracy, and you can't go after the people that got the money. Right. That's just not fair, because they lost a lot too. They lost more than you did.
Right.
Except they, nothing is nothing, and a whole bunch above nothing is quite a bit. If everybody else is, so it's a very interesting. I've looked into this whole Bellamy phenomena. And it's very interesting to see how this thing kept being New Life blown into it. Mm-hmm. 1935, Columbia came out with a big study, and they said, we've got to see what this is all about. And so they got some very neutral people, like John Dewey.
Very, of course.
Very neutral. And Edward Meeks, who was head of a whole bunch of publishing firms, and they said, we want you to go and give us the most amazing, most influential books, of the last 100 years. And it was interesting that Das Kapital was at the head of all three of these guys' lists,
mm-hmm.
and Edward Bellamy, and Mein Kampf. These were all things that were in the mid-30s, and it was interesting that how this was used, how this was presented to the nation, through not just literary circles. This was presented in journals that you could buy at a newsstand to learn how to, at the same time, make really nice jams and, how to preserve eggs and how to make blinds for your farmhouse. And it's interesting how, if you really dig into this, how absolutely coordinated this whole thing was, and how it was, basically designed to keep a cap on the fact that when people lose everything, you've got some danger on your hands. I mean, mm-hmm. when people have nothing left to lose, that's an enormously dangerous situation, And it was amazing how much resources were brought to bear to divert the attention away from what really happened and who were the people who made out like bandits.
Yeah, absolutely. Well said. And, you know, when you can start to engineer society away from thinking about objective facts and get people on this choose your own adventure sort of scheme where you introduce a problem and, you know, induce a reaction and have a pre-planned, you know, solution, prepackaged solution. Here's what we can do about it. You start to get people used to that. Oh boy, stick around, folks. We'll be right back.
Don't regret growing old. It's a privilege denied to many. Heart disease is taking our youth from us. Young people in their 30s, 40s, 50s, and beyond are dying needlessly. One of the hardest messages I've ever had to deliver is to convince people that something natural like Extendivite should be taken as a preventative measure. I'm sure you heard, an ounce of prevention is worth a pound of cure. Extendivite is that ounce. Take Extendivite for 1 year and see what your doctor has to say and how much better you feel. Herbs take time to address the problem. It took years of life to have a problem. Give Extendivite 1 year to fix the problem. Don't wait until it's too late. Call 1-877-928-8822 or visit heartdrop.com or visit us on Amazon.
Extend your life with Extendivite.
Folks, we're living in a world the likes of which we've never perceived any clearer than we do now. The plan for global governance has been in the works for generations and would have likely been achieved by now, but for the fact that the globalists left open their Achilles heel. With all their tools, Federal Reserve System, fiat currency, No Child Left Behind, and then Common Core education introduced to our schools to dumb us down, vaccines, pharmaceuticals to lobotomize us, GMO foods, insertion of compromised or bought and paid for politicians, judges, mainstream media propaganda, all pieced together like a puzzle designed to ultimately bring the world under submission. But with all their strategy, they forgot one thing, knowledge. And knowledge is power. With knowledge, their bombardment is nullified. Folks, with that, as brilliant and knowledgeable as you've become, among the wisest audience of any radio audience in the world, and you are, I want you to take a moment to reflect and ask yourself, how much of that knowledge did I obtain from Republic Broadcasting Network? How high has my consciousness been raised since I've been a listener? How fast am I now able to discriminate truth from fake news by being a Republic Broadcasting listener? How clear am I now able to see the world since I've been listening to RBN? Ask yourselves those questions, folks. Then ask yourself, what is that knowledge worth to me? Like my morning coffee, how would I survive without it? A voice of truth in a sea of lies. Do we not all need to make sure it survives? Like public broadcasting, we are now finding we can only survive with listener support. Censorship, advertisers being attacked, truth itself being attacked. It's the only way through this. We at Republic Broadcasting humbly ask you to become a supporter. Look at your budget and make a determination of what Republic Broadcasting is worth to you and what you can afford on a monthly basis. Go to republicbroadcasting.org and pledge 20, 30, 40, 50, if possible, 100 a month or more if it's affordable. Click the donate button and become a regular monthly donor. Assure both us and yourself that Republic Broadcasting truth will continue to flow like that morning coffee. The network thanks you.
Is their appointed duty. They keep trying to tell me, all you want to do is use me. But my answer, you use me up, until you use me up.
Welcome back. Yeah, so when you get people on this train of thinking away from objective facts, it's interesting that, you know, we can look at criminal investigations and see that means, motive, and opportunity are important to criminal investigation. When you identify those things, as you're talking about, William, that should get you probably investigating further and maybe learning and remembering history so as not to repeat the worst of it in the future and not to be taken advantage of. But when you can get people away from that and start to engineer panics, like you said, I mean, I have talked at length over the years about how the most recent big one, which is on the same order of magnitude as what you mentioned from 1893, the subprime contagion, Bruce Wiseman wrote a great series of articles and says very clearly, spells out very clearly how that could not have happened by accident. It would be like saying I accidentally baked a perfect apple pie. And this, as you said, keeps happening over and over again.
But yeah, if you look at the date, you know, Bellamy's book was published in 1888, and that big depression of 1893, you know, in the 85, 86, 87, there was a lot of panic because there was a lot of what was defined then as working class violence. And this was contrasted with this outrageous, conspicuous consumption of the privileged minority, which was all the rage then. I mean, it was in Ladies' Home Journal. I mean, it was like, oh, you know, she has two spiral staircases coming down and an Italian marble floor. And people were saying, I can't even afford to buy a loaf of bread. I can't even afford to buy the flour to make a loaf of bread. And so there was a lot of social unrest. And so we needed to have something. Like, you could go in and say, well, let's use the army. Well, that doesn't really work. So this is why I say these window dressings appear to point the direction. Like, this, we could have such a better government and a better society if we could just have centralized planning. We can work on this.
Exactly, and to sort of bridge the gap in those thoughts, I mean, I think of that excerpt from H.G. Wells' The New World Order, Chapter 5, on Sated Youth, that I mentioned from time to time, where he talks about the mob of the 20th century. And, you know, he says that the frustrated multitudes have been made acutely aware of their own frustration. They read now. So, you know, we got to do something about that. Anyway.
Yeah, and up steps the internet. We don't have to read it anymore. We can just, like, watch YouTubes to our heart's content.
Exactly. Thanks,
William.
Thanks
a lot, Chris.
Much appreciated, as always. Mike, sorry we missed you. We had some technical glitches there at the end. Folks, I hope it was informative. As always, it truly is an honor and a pleasure. Take care. God bless. We'll catch you on the other side.
Voices that counter this avalanche is becoming increasingly difficult. With the endless corruption running rampant throughout our government, independent voices are needed more than ever to battle the offensive against our freedoms and liberties. As a listener of RBN, no one understands this concept better than you. Now it's up to you to do your part. The time has come for you to take action and begin broadcasting the truth to hundreds or thousands of people every month. Sound impossible? Quite the contrary. With pointed slogans from LibertyStickers.com, you can reach countless sleeping Americans unaware that they live in a real-life wonderland. LibertyStickers.com has a huge inventory of political bumper stickers and messages that reflect the truth about our government, our politicians, and the future of America. With so many in stock, there's one perfect for you. Visit us today at LibertyStickers.com. Again, that's LibertyStickers.com. Do your part. Your voice is important. Let it be heard.
You're listening to the Republic Broadcasting Network, because you can handle the truth.